Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Well, since I'm here, it must be Wednesday, Paul, and another day at the elite studio of OC Talk Radio, one of my favorite places to hang out. So tell me, Paul, what's up?
The sky is shining, life is looking good, and I don't know, you're about to bring a dark cloud into the room here.
I don't think so. I think we're going to shed light into the room here. I want to, first of all, let me welcome all our listeners to the next chapter with Charlie. It's nice to have you with us. I want to begin our show today with a question. Consider this rather long list of names. Woody Allen, Isaac Asimov, Kevin Bacon, George Carlin, Jodie Foster, Joyce Carol Oates, Brad Pitt, Ayn Rand, Oliver Sacks, Kurt Vonnegut, James Baldwin, Charles Bukowski, who happens to be my favorite poet, Ursula K. Le Guin, Pablo Neruda, Virginia Woolf, Stephen Hawking, Sir Richard Branson, and Bertrand Russell. So quite a name, impressive list of people. What do you think all of these famous and intelligent people have in common?
They were all on OC Talk Radio? No, I don't think so.
When I add the name San Harris to the list, some of you might know, they are all atheists. And all of them have contributed significantly to the value of society and to the world. They have made a huge impact on the poor and disenfranchised, as well as initiated critical thinking about the state of life and of the universe. So today, I'm choosing to go off my normal grid and really talk about a subject that I know nothing about, and I'm dying to find out about, and we're going to talk about the subject of atheism.
Don't say the word dying here. We can't talk about dying and atheism together here.
I'm genuinely curious. I'd like to know what atheism is, and even more important, what it isn't. Why a person would adopt atheism over theism. And my hope today is to simply understand a general overall perspective of the atheist. Many very bright, as we've just seen by that list, very bright and compassionate people have come to the atheistic conclusion through deep study, through listening to their own moral compass, and they've often suffered some sort of restrained cynicism about what they believe or don't believe. My very special guest today is Matthew Sitton. Matthew, I want to tell you, is a very thoughtful man. To give you an idea, he's fluent in conversational Japanese and spent a year as a teacher in Japan teaching English. Is that right, Matthew? You taught English?
Yes, sir.
And so what's up? You ready to start this thing?
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. Before we begin, Matthew wrote, I asked him to write a bio. I asked all my guests to write a bio that I can introduce them. And Matthew wrote a thoughtful and passionate personal bio describing his alignment with atheism. I love this piece you've written, Matthew.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
And I want to read it to our audience. So Matthew writes, Matthew Sitton is a Southern California native who is openly atheist. He grew up as a Christian but found himself leaving religion in his early adult life. A combination of time abroad, self-reflection, and extensive reading led Matthew to find that he could live in a progressive and moral life without theism or other supernatural beliefs. Matthew believes the worldview without attachments affirms our ability and responsibility to live meaningful, ethical lives, lives capable of adding to the greater good of humanity. Matthew now defines himself as a humanist and tries to live the rest of his life, and I really like this part. He tries to live his life informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. I love that.
Thank you.
Inspired, informed by science, inspired by art, motivated by compassion. Now, what's really interesting is I do the same thing, and I'm a theist.
Of course.
So we'll have an interesting discussion. Matthew, welcome once again to the show. So glad to have you with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
I've been looking forward to this for about 3 weeks. I heard an interview with Krista Tippett and Maria Popova, and Maria Popova is an atheist, and they talked about it, and it just sparked my interest that I wanted to find out more about atheism and to talk about this fascinating subject. Now, one caveat that I want to give to all our listeners, please note, the purpose of this show is to satisfy Charlie's curiosity about atheism. We're not going to get into a debate about theism versus atheism. You know, he's not going to try to talk me into being an atheist, and I'm not going to try to talk him into being a theist.
Oh, forget it. I got to put away my notes now.
All of your argumentative
exactly,
notes.
Exactly.
Apologies. Are you apologetics?
That's right.
What I want to do is I hope to learn, and I hope you do as well. So let's get into this subject, and we're going to go right into it. Matthew, you were raised in a Christian home, and after research and life's lessons, you have since become an atheist. Can you tell me a bit about that story from faith to one where you do not accept the notion of a deity?
Sure. I guess I'll start with a bit of an overview and then give the specific story. I think my experience as an American is probably pretty similar to most experiences, especially here in Southern California. I wouldn't say specifically that my home was Christian, but I went to a Christian school. My friends were Christian. Their parents were Christian. One of my parents was Christian. So it's difficult to not come into intersection with those Christian views. So it's definitely informed my worldview, and that's what led me to be a Christian at an early age. But I think also similar to many Americans is I was also exposed to plenty of other worldviews. And I think a person to really highlight or point out here is my mother, who's always been openly atheist. So that label didn't always have the same stigma attached to it as it might for other Americans who grew up in maybe completely Christian households. And then I also think that the time in which I was born, with the internet being such an important part of my life, exposed me consistently to views that were not like my own. And so it made me a little more open than perhaps people of previous generations or perhaps even people in different countries that don't have the same access to information the way I did. Specifically, I'd say that my leaving the faith was a gradual one. I think over time, my label of Christian fit the way I viewed the world less and less. And so I found myself abroad with friends, and someone quite frankly just asked me, well, what are you? What do you believe? And I had this existential crisis of realizing I don't know what I believe anymore. So I came home and really made it my mission to decide I'm going to figure out what I believe. And I'm either going to get to the end of this and I'm going to be fervently a Christian, I'm going to believe it with every part of me, and I'm going to live that life, or I'm going to stop calling myself this and figure out what I should call myself. And after kind of months of exploration, I ended up where I'm at today, which is being openly atheist.
That's interesting. So it really was, it was an experience overseas, so you got to see other lifestyles, other thought patterns, other belief patterns.
Yeah, I think that played a huge role in it.
Yeah.
It wasn't the only thing. Certainly there were steps in my life before that. But I'd say that's probably the moment, if I had to define one, that most shifted my worldview.
Now, what is, you know, this subject of agnostic, which is sort of in between theist and atheist, what do you think about that subject?
I think that's a great question. Whenever I'm asked that, I immediately try to separate agnosticism from the kind of colloquial definition.
Right.
I wouldn't describe agnosticism as a position that's like between atheism and theism, right?
Correct.
I think that it's a separate answer to a different question. I describe atheism as the answer to kind of one question. Do you believe in a God? Agnosticism, I think, has to do with whether we know something, right? Whether I believe we can know something or can't know something. So I personally would actually use both those labels if I wanted to be really theologically specific, and I would consider myself an agnostic atheist. So I would say that I don't think we can know whether there's a God or not. And as a result, I do not believe there is a God. There are people who take harder stances than me that would consider themselves like a Gnostic atheist and say, I can prove there's no God. Just like there's Christians that, or Muslims or Buddhists that say the same thing. I can prove that my faith is right.
Right.
But I also think there's many of us that say, this is what I believe. And honestly, I don't know if it can be proven or not. So I think there are two questions that a person has to ask themselves in order to get a better view of how they perceive the world.
You're going to make me think about being an agnostic theist.
Sure, sure. Well, I think the desire to call oneself an agnostic as opposed to calling themselves an atheist really speaks to kind of the stigma that that word has, right? And the label that people fear being perceived a particular way. And so they don't want to call themselves an atheist because it comes with all of this kind of cultural baggage. And so they find this other position that sounds a little softer, right? Sounds a little more reasonable or a little more open. People often get this impression that if I'm using the word atheist, that means I'm anti-theist, which, you know, I'm sure you can find positions in which I would be more anti-theist, but there's plenty of areas that I'm not. So
it always is taken in that position, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
I think that people, when they hear the word atheist, they're thinking an antagonist immediately.
Absolutely.
They're not thinking that this is another person I can just sit and talk with, that we don't happen to believe the same thing about a deity, but we believe the same thing about life, the universe, and everything. And we agree, like you and I agree on probably 75% of what's going on in the world.
Sure.
But we have differences in belief about a deity. I don't get persecuted as much as I think an atheist might. Now, I'm not saying you're undergoing persecution and people after
no,
you.
No, 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 yeah.
But there is a degree of cynicism and a degree of, oh, yeah, so you're an atheist, so you just don't believe in God. And
right.
But ultimately, that is the definition, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. That's if you asked me to define atheism, that's exactly what I would say. It's the answer to one question, and do you believe if there's a God or not? And really, it's yes or no. And I happen to answer, no, I don't believe there is a God.
I read this in preparation for our talk today. I read a couple of things, and I looked up on one website that's AmericanAtheist.org.
Yeah, I'm familiar.
And they said there are four truths about atheism, and we'll go over those.
Yeah,
but they said the first one, atheism is one thing, a lack of belief in gods. That's it.
Yep.
I mean, it just, you know, there's no other, like, you know, you can write a whole long list of other things around it, but that is the primary definition of an atheist. So these experiences led you to believe that. What is it about someone of a faith tradition that you question their belief system, that makes you, you know, what questions would you have for a theist? You know, because I think we ask, why do you not believe? I think your question would be, why do you believe?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think a lot of times when I have those conversations, that's a lot of the times the way it turns, right? Because my answer is pretty simple, which is no, I don't believe. So then it turns to, well, why do you believe? And we got to kind of unpack all of those ideas. And just like many atheists come to their disbelief in many ways, people of faith come to their beliefs in many different ways as well. So that's not always easy to unpack.
We were talking about it before the podcast, and you asked me, why am I a theist? And I said, I can give you no scientific proof. I can only give you what I think is a rational, but I don't know if it's a logical response, but, you know, it's a response that works for me. And it's something that is mysterious and revelatory, that I feel there was a revelation by, let me use the word God, of the reality of this deity's existence. And I can't go any further. You know,
sure.
You tried to say, can I prove that? Absolutely not. There's no way I could prove that.
Right.
But do I believe it? Is there something that's gone on inside of me? Absolutely. Absolutely. That's led me to this. to this conclusion.
Well, I totally sympathize with that experience. I mean, I was Christian for many years, right? So I remember having experiences like that. I went through periods of really strong belief. You know, I just look back on it now and I prescribe different reasons why I felt that way. I kind of recognize that I can have those same emotional, really profound kind of euphoric experiences without a faith tradition, right? I can have really deep connections with people around me. I can have kind of overwhelming experiences of joy without it needing to be tied to some kind of supernatural other. I can really recognize that this is something that's being manifested from within me, and the value I'm prescribing onto it and the experience that I get to live and kind of the beauty in that of how lucky I am to be in the position I am to where I get to experience human life and how unique that is compared to every other life form or any other scenario of the world that might not manifest itself the way it has.
Yeah,
so it gives me kind of a deeper appreciation for how rare or how unlikely it is that I'm here. And so that's kind of where I prescribe, that's how I'm able to prescribe meaning to it. I don't need a deity for it. I don't need a supernatural experience. I recognize that this is just part of being human.
You're almost quoting, I believe her name is Jana Levinson, but I'm not really sure. She's an astrophysicist. And it's the astrophysicists who really seem to get this thing of this wonder, because they get the wonder of creation. And she's out, her mission is to find planets like Earth that could be inhabitable. So her mission is basically an impossible one, she admits, but that's her mission in life. She loves that.
The kid that grew up watching Star Wars will shout with glee, sign me up, I want to go.
Yes. So tell me, you're talking like joy, excitement, I'm going to add to their compassion and love and that whole package of attributes that are non-scientific attributes at this point, at least.
Sure.
Where do those come from, do you think?
Well, I think that there are scientific explanations for those, right? I would say that those are emotions. If you wanted me to get really brass tacks and how they manifest themselves. You know, and we have different mechanisms in our body that fire off and actually help us physically experience those different words I'm describing. But I would say they're real. I don't say you can measure someone being angry, right? You can measure someone being happy. You can measure someone being joyful. Now, the science is clearly not advanced enough to prescribe much more than that, right? But I think the difference in the atheist position is when I'm confronted with that kind of lack of certainty, I just kind of step back and say, I don't know yet. And I'm okay not knowing, right? I'm okay just experiencing this emotion and recognizing that it's a really integral part of the human experience. And I may never know, and that's okay.
I love that. It's striking to me how similar we are, because I can say the same thing of theism. You know, I can say the same thing of that. I know this, but I don't know how I know it. I can't prove it, but I'm comfortable knowing it without knowing why or how that it's the truth of it.
Sure. Yeah.
But always admitting it, as I told you on the way up here, I loved a bishop that talked to me one time and says, we proclaim our faith with modesty and humility, always knowing we could be wrong.
Right.
You know, and I've always loved that statement. I've used it for 30 years now, that we could be wrong.
Yeah, I think the intersection, like you're talking about there, where what's important to you and what's important to me, that they can overlap and we can find common ground and common goals and common interests easily. And I think you can do that with almost any worldview. I think what separates those two worldviews, though, is how we get there, right? And like we talked about before we went on air, and I'll bring it up now, is our definitions of truth, right? What do we think is true? How do we arrive at what is true? I think that's maybe how we can end up in similar spots, but with different perspectives.
How do you define what is true?
I would say, I'd say that something is true, it's something that we can know.
And how do we know it? How do we have to know it? Is there some sort of epistemology behind it?
Sure. Yeah, I think that things that we know are things that we can verify, that we can prove, and then are well reasoned and backed by evidence.
So is it scientific evidence? Is it math?
I think science is one of the mechanisms. Yeah, we learn. It's one of the tools we would use to find the facts that lead us to truth. And I think it's been one of the most powerful tools that
right.
humankind's been able to invent, right? It's led us to really profound truths about the universe and about the way things are composed. And so, yeah, I think it's probably the best tool that we've invented to discern truth.
Do you personally believe anything that's true, that's not provable, but it's true for you?
I would say that I've had experiences that are meaningful, that have utility, but I think that I've also experienced things that are not true, right? I've experienced, I think that there's a shadow there and that's a person and it's not, right? I'm often deceived
right.
by myself into thinking that things are true, only to learn later on that they're not. So I would say that I've experienced things that are not provable, but it's likely because they were not true, right? And maybe they were useful or had utility in that moment,
yes.
right? Take that
yes.
shadow example. That may have been useful to me if I was there, because if it had been an attacker, it would have prevented me from being harmed, right? So it had utility. It was useful. But upon reflection, I kind of see that it was a delusion and that it was not useful in that moment and that it was not true. But to say that is useless would kind of betray all of the years of human evolution where that was very useful to my survival. I think we have plenty of experiences that are analogous to that.
Yeah, and I think probably all of our emotions, do you think those are part of the evolutionary journey of the human being?
Absolutely.
As the growth of our emotions?
Yeah, we're social creatures, right? And emotion is one of the ways in which we interact and regulate our behavior between each other. Now, they've obviously become much more complex and much more useful and difficult to parse out as we've become more complex creatures in societies. But you can find very basic emotions in animals, right? And they provide
yes,
utility for those animals.
Exactly,
and I really think
exactly.
that we're no different. It just happens to be that those emotions have become more and more important as our societies become more complex.
It's interesting that you would use the word utility, because you're talking about the usefulness. Am I understanding the word
yeah.
you're using? The word, how useful is it? And what would be, and I'm using my fingers quotes, you know,
sure.
what would be true in the United States is not true in Amsterdam.
Not necessarily. I mean, I suppose I wouldn't use true in that definition, right? If we're talking about whether things are morally relative across all cultures, I would push back on that. And I'd say that certainly there are different peaks and valleys, right? There are different ways to be happy. But I would not say that everything leads to happiness or anything like that, right? That all views or all ways are equal, right? I think that we have the ability to discern what is maximizing human well-being and what is not.
Oh, and you know what? And I really want to talk about that.
Sure.
But before we do, we need to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Excellent.
Hi there, you're listening to Charlie Hedges and the Next Chapter with Charlie. I am here with Matthew Sitton, and what he calls an openly atheist man. And we are talking about atheism, but we're not debating Christianity or theism versus atheism, I'm trying to understand atheism and what it's about. And the one thing I have learned, there is one definition. An atheist is one thing, does not believe in God or gods.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the end of the definition. Now, you know, as we were getting to, we were talking about the subject of morality and where does the morality come from. As I view it, a theistic person has a basis for morality. There's a book to go to, you know, whether it be the Bible or the Quran or Lao Tzu, which
right.
I happen to read quite regularly, that will give ideas toward morals. The atheist, you have a moral responsibility that I think is even greater than ours. We have a responsibility in our tradition to obey, to follow the rules. You have a responsibility in your tradition to invent the rules.
I wouldn't say that we're inventing the rules, but it's a little harder. You can't just follow what something tells you, right? You got to really wrestle with each issue and decide what you think is well-reasoned and what is moral. And that's one of the reasons I think so many atheists push back and say, an atheist is just an answer to one question. It's because the way that we all arrive after we've answered that question, do you believe in God or not, to what is moral and what is not, is slightly different. I mentioned in my bio, that's why I describe myself as a humanist. And I think that describes a little bit of the way that I arrive at what I think is moral and not moral. But there are plenty of atheists that have found different methods to determine what they think is right and wrong.
Such as?
One of the most common arguments, and you mentioned Sam Harris, so I'll just kind of plug that here, is his moral landscape and the idea that we should kind of look at what's moral based on whether it is creating well-being for living things and living creatures. I've heard other people make arguments from logic. I've heard, you know, kind of a variety of arguments that someone far smarter than me could articulate better.
Yeah, so I want to know, too, what is your life since you've adopted atheism? You know, and I want to say it's your belief system, but it's not a belief system, so I
sure.
can't say that.
Yeah.
So since you've adopted atheism, period.
Yeah.
How has that impacted your life?
Great question. I think that deciding to leave my faith was the most important decision I've made. It so profoundly impacted my life and changed the way I view the world in a positive way. You know, I really, looking back at myself before in a faith perspective, it really feels like a different person. So it's really transformed almost every aspect of my life. It gave me a thirst for knowledge that's almost insatiable. It gave me this really profound sense of responsibility to do what is right by my fellow person. It kind of renewed my sense of wonder. It did so many things in my life that I wouldn't have ever expected, and I couldn't be more grateful.
You know, what surprises to me is that you know, I'm baffled here at how similar our beliefs are, because all of those things you just explained, I feel as a theist. You know, I feel those same things. I wonder what was blocking that. Was it maybe you were in a more conservative branch than I was, and that was trying to push certain things on you that you had a harder time adopting?
Sure. I mean, that definitely played a role. I was in a more conservative environment, so there was a certain amount of guilt that was kind
right.
of weighing on me when I was in a religious tradition, and that's part of where you will find my more anti-theist tendencies, is when I notice the kind of harmful aspects of religion being used on people.
There's one and two.
Yeah.
One or two around.
But I would say the sticking point that causes the difference between, in this example, your worldview and mine, is that I really feel compelled to only believe things because, to use my prior definition, that they're true, that they can be provable, that I know I've come to them well-reasoned, I've researched them, I've got evidence, I can verify them. And I feel convicted that the decision I'm making is right. And perhaps maybe what compels me to that is knowing that, you know, when this is over, I believe that's it, right? I'm going to die and there's no more.
Oh, yeah.
So you jumped
far ahead. That was going to be a question later, but let's do that question.
Well, I think they're connected, right? And so since I know that my time is very limited, and in the scope of the universe that it's finite, it's frankly almost unimportant, right?
Not almost. It is unimportant.
Well, I would say the reason I say almost is because, right, it's important to me.
It's important to you, yes.
Obviously.
And those that love you.
Exactly. Yes. But in the grand scheme of the universe, I'm nothing. And so it makes every moment I do have that much more important and valuable because I know that when it ends, that's it. Right? The stakes are so high.
Really? That's a lot of responsibility. Yeah. I wanted to ask, as you discovered yourself to be an atheist and you left the Christian tradition, did you face any relational issues? Did you have friends that all of a sudden you didn't have anymore? And
I'd say by and large, almost everyone that I came out to was well received. People handled it in different ways, right? Obviously, it had me reconnecting with my mother in many ways that I hadn't realized had been closed to me because I'd still been religious and she'd kind of watched me from the outside the whole time. You know, my entire family was really gracious, but I had conversations where people felt very threatened by it, right? And I felt it was only appropriate that we'd spent many years developing this relationship kind of under the fabric of Christianity. And I felt that it was important that if we'd shared those religious experiences that I told them, I no longer felt the same way. I felt I had a responsibility to be honest with them. And some people handled that very graciously, and we remained really close friends. And I've had other friendships that either have become more superficial or disappeared entirely. So it really just has depended on the person and how they've taken that change in me. But I'd say by and large, most people have either been gracious or kind of avoided the topic.
So you've not really felt persecution or anything?
No, I wouldn't say that I've felt like specific persecution, like people coming after me. Certainly there's a societal pressure.
What is that? What is a societal pressure? You know, I define it in my terms. Have you defined it in yours?
Sure. Well, so many aspects of the American life have been laced with Christian ideology that it's really inescapable, right? It's written on our money since the 1950s. It's been included into our Pledge of Allegiance. You see the Ten Commandments placed in halls that are supposed to be separate from church and state. And so there are areas in my life where I would like to just be who I am, but there's this kind of a pressure of that I have to go out of my way to say, oh, I'm not that way, right? I go to court and I need to put my hand on a Bible. I have to specifically request, I don't want to put my hand on a Bible. I don't believe in the Bible. I would rather you.
Oh, really? You would do? Is that what you would do?
Yeah, I would not place my hand on a Bible if I was in court.
Would they do? Would they put you in jail?
No, absolutely not. We'd have bigger problems if that was the case.
They wouldn't charge you with contempt of court or anything like that.
No, there's plenty of other options that the court is more than willing to provide for you, right? But the fact that the default is Christian, there's a certain amount of pressure on that, right? And I'd imagine that immigrants to this country or people of other faith traditions experience something very similar to I do, right? If your parents were Buddhist and they immigrated here and you were raised in a Buddhist household, you'd face many of these similar pressures if you were in a court environment, to use my same example. So that's really kind of the pressure I talk about societally that makes you feel a certain level of persecution. I'm very privileged, right? I grew up in Southern California. My parents are well off. I kind of been given one of the easiest lives you could have. So the persecution is very minor, and therefore I find other things that are more important to me. But to some people in other parts of the world, being an atheist is dangerous, right? You can be killed for things like that. Certainly there are periods in American history where you could be killed for that. So it's not a label that comes without its baggage, but certainly I'm in a much safer spot here than other people.
What do you think of labeling? I mean, we are a labeling society, and I'm really personally moving against labeling because I think labeling, you know, goes against American principle, which is our principle is individuality.
Right.
And we are turning individuality into labels, and everybody is part of some kind of subgroup.
Right.
How do you feel about being part of a label of a subgroup? Does that bother you, or is that just...
No, I wouldn't say it bothers me. Perhaps this is where my experience abroad tips my perspective a little bit, right? So I went abroad and spent time in a collectivist culture. And so I was able to be exposed to really the both positive and negative aspects of a collectivist culture, and how there's a real benefit in recognizing you're part of a group and that you have stake in that group and that you have a responsibility to the group to do well, right? Now, obviously, taken to an extreme, that has its own problems. But it really highlighted for me kind of the hyper-individualism that American culture can have, and the negativity that can come with that as well, just like there's
exactly.
negativity with the hyper-collectivism.
Yes.
So I don't entirely shy away from labels. I think if we use labels as the only way to decide how people are, it's a problem. But I think that they're useful, right? You and I can decide we're part of the same group, and then we can align with each other. We can find areas where our goals overlap. And consequently, if we find ourselves in different groups, we can find where those groups intersect, right? Where you're part of one group and I'm part of another. And we actually find that we have this mutual interest as part of separate groups, and that we can unite and do things. So I think that they're useful. And I wouldn't throw them out entirely.
Mm. I'm completely changing tracks.
Sure.
And I'm going to go to point number two on the AmericanAtheist.org. And it said, atheism is not a belief system, nor is it a religion. Now, the belief system I have a hard time with.
How so?
Because not believing is a belief, it seems to me.
Okay, I could see that that perspective. I think that when you believe something, right, you have the responsibility, you have the burden of proof. And so perhaps that's the difference. If I can easily say I don't know something, right? It's your responsibility to, if you say, well, I know this, to then, well, show me, prove it to me.
So
that's one of the reasons I think the American Atheist website lists it that way, is I think the burden of proof is on the people who are proclaiming knowledge.
Yeah, I read that, and I thought that was just really, really fascinating that the in the debates, typically – the atheist is asked to prove their position, when really the people needing to prove their position are the ones that proclaim belief.
Exactly.
Is that you know? I don't have to prove that I don't believe, because you know there's no proof to believe. If you show me the proof to believe, then I'm going to change my mind right
exactly.
now.
Exactly. Yeah.
Show me the evidence.
Right.
Show me what it is. And it's we were talking offline about. I believe in Christianity, the very basis of Christianity, of faith, of Christianity, says it's unprovable. It says it's the conviction of things hoped for and the assurance of things to come. Don't you remember?
No, I don't.
You had to remember that.
I blocked
that.
It. No, I'm kidding. Right.
But it basically is saying that it's not provable. And so that's the beauty of it, and that's the beauty of faith. Is that it is an unprovable belief system, which makes it more mysterious, more miraculous, and more wonderful in my eyes.
Right.
And yet, the things that I just described are the very reasons you're an atheist.
Exactly. Yeah. I hear those religion described in that way, right? And I'll be honest, I have an aversion to it. Right. Not to say that I when someone says it, I suddenly dislike the person. But I remember that experience and looked at other parts of the Bible where I felt it clearly contradicted that. Right. And clearly said, no, right. I am the way, the truth, and the life, and the only way to heaven is through me.
Yes,
and so
yes.
I looked at other parts of the Bible where it's saying two things. What do I believe then? Right.
Yeah.
And I remember having this moment when I was exploring, OK, what do I believe? And I'd say, I think this is the moment where I finally said it out loud. I'm an atheist. And I was in the car, and I'd finally figured out, I've got this religion thing figured out. I'm the only one who has figured out Christianity. My way of understanding Christianity, that's the truth. And then I was struck with this, how narcissistic is that, really? I'm the first person in the history of mankind to have finally figured out religion. Likely story. And I kind of drove silently for a little bit and then pulled into the driveway and realized, I don't believe this. I'm an atheist. And that moment forward, my life was changed.
I think I want to sort of wrap up our time here, but I want to wrap it up with something quite different than I expected, and that I'm surprised, and probably because I'm a liberal Christian, so that probably helps. If I was a very conservative Christian, we'd be having a different kind of conversation right now, I'm sure.
100%. That's where that intersection I mentioned earlier, I think, really overlaps, right? Yeah. I'm going to have much more in common with you, a very progressive Christian, than I would with a very conservative atheist, right?
That's why I'm walking away thinking we believe more the same things than things we disbelieve. Is that, you know, our moral values are similar, our ideas about what is truth and how you define truth, and I think there's just a lot of things that we agree on that I would hope that our audience would find that an atheist is a thinking person, a caring person, and I attribute to you a lot of responsibility, because you have to determine your ethics and your values. Those have to come from somewhere where you will make a proclamation of saying, you know, I believe cheating is wrong.
Right. Yeah. I think the beauty of that position is that, you know, I come to what I think, to use your example, I believe cheating is wrong, right? But that position is always open for change, right? If circumstance or the evidence changes, if I see a situation where cheating is the ethical thing, it becomes the ethical thing, right? It's not so black and white. There's a nuance. I can imagine situations of where I think cheating would be perfectly acceptable. if we're talking about it generally, of course I'm going to agree that cheating's bad. But we can do thought experiments where I would entertain the idea.
Yes, yes.
And so that's kind of the beauty of the I don't know, is that if something is well-reasoned and there's evidence for it, I'm willing to change my position in my mind.
You know, we've both listened to Tim Ferriss on Tim Ferriss' podcast. And, you know, at the end of his podcast, he always says, if you had a billboard, are you familiar with this?
I'm not.
He asked this question. If you had a billboard that everybody could see this billboard, what words would you put on that billboard?
I don't know.
That's perfect. And you know what I would put? Change your mind. it's always open that new evidence comes in, and you can maintain your beliefs as an atheist with integrity and with truth as you understand it, with love, with compassion, with doing good deeds for people. And I can maintain my belief as a theist and honor those same things.
Absolutely.
Which is, I hope that's interesting to our audience. I hope that our audience can see that atheists are actually smart people that have really considered some deep issues. Now, of course, you know, we're going to find exceptions on
both
sides.
Yeah, we're not as scary on whole, though, as people would have us out to be, right?
We don't. Yeah, I don't think so. I find myself completely fearless right now, and so that's why I want to thank you for being on the show. You've been really helpful, Matthew.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate your time.
And thanks for spending time with me. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in to the Next Chapter with Charlie. And also be sure to check us out on our website at thenextchapter.life. That's LIFE. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, right here in Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net.